Hi everyone, and welcome to the Product Marketing Insider podcast, the show where I deliver unrivaled intel, indispensable tips, and unmissable insights from the leading lights in product marketing. I'm your host, Lawrence Chapman, and I'm the senior copywriter here at Product Marketing Alliance. In this episode, I'm thrilled to be joined by Anna Serrano, Global Product Marketing Lead at Salesforce. In 2022, Anna was included in our list of the top 100 product marketing influencers and has more than 15 years of experience, during which time she's gained expertise in B2B productivity, collaboration, and CRM solutions across regions and industries. In this episode, me and Anna challenge a common assumption that PMMs need to occupy a senior position to lead from the front of their company, discussing ways in which product marketers can lead without authority.
First and foremost, Anna, thanks so much for joining me on Product Marketing Insider.
Thank you so much, Lawrence, for inviting me. I'm very excited.
So just to start off, can you please just give us a brief overview of your role at Salesforce?
Of course. So I joined Salesforce 4 years ago, and I'm part of the EMEA Sales Cloud product marketing team. Sales Cloud is one of the product solutions that the company offers. It's the CRM software for sales reps and sales leaders. So I'm part of a team that is led by our director PMM, and I lead a small team of PMM, and we take after sales training and campaign strategy and execution.
Okay, that sounds great. And just to start off our discussion, really, can you take us through an example of where you've been tasked with leading a project in a non-leadership capacity? And what approach did you adopt to facilitate success? And how did you overcome any obstacles that you may have encountered?
Of course. So I shared with you the project that changed my outlook and approach at leading without authority. So about 10 years ago, my manager at the time asked me to become the PMM of what we call a growth product for the company. And a growth product for the company meant a product that had quite a bit of small revenue weight, but that the company thought had potential or a strategic importance, so they wanted to invest in it. Until then, I had always been PMM of the core product, like the cash cow product. And that meant that my product was always the top priority for the DM, the leadership team, and really everyone in the company. And my manager warned me, this is not going to be the case with this product, okay? Your challenge is going to be, you're going to have to convince a lot of people to work with you and help you be successful. And really, when he told me that, I felt really overwhelmed. I went to my mentor at the time, and I was telling her, you know what? I don't know if I can do this because I don't think I'm very good at convincing people to do things they don't want to do. I feel like this is more of a sales people kind of skill, and I don't think I have it. So she suggested I made a list of people in the company that I thought were good at this convincing people, and maybe had a few coffees with them and see if I learned something. And when I did that, I did learn that actually all these people that were really good at leading without authority actually spent quite a bit of time prepping, and there were certain things that they told me that could help. And what that did for me is that it opened my eyes to the fact that this was a skill that could be learned, and that you could get better at it. So that really changed my mind from, okay, my project is doomed, to, okay, there's some things I can do that I can become better at it. Starting with the fact that, this fear I had that no one really cared about the product because it didn't bring money. I just learned I had to find the value it brought beyond the revenue to the rest of the company. Like, how did I translate my goal into something valuable for the rest of the teams? And once I did that, it all started clicking.
Okay, fantastic. And then just kind of switching our attentions to, well, it's like the role of relationships, I guess, in business. So relationships being key to any business's success and the influence of others, particularly when you're trying to secure like invaluable buy-in from senior figures. But what approach should product marketers take to establish and maintain relationships with key stakeholders?
Oh, yes. So relationships, as you said, they're really key when trying to get buy-in with your product for your project or your product. And I think my approach in any case is to be intentional and to apply a little bit of project management to relationship handling. I know this sounds a little bit cold at first because we think of relationships as something that just needs to organically grow and nurture. But if you think about it in your personal life, you also are intentional about your friends or even your family. I'm sure sometimes you think, oh, it's been a while, I haven't talked with this friend, I need to give them a call, or there's this like important thing I want to share with my siblings, so let's call them. You track people's birthdays probably, right? So it's just taking it a bit a step further with relationships at work. So on this project I was telling you about with my growth product, I did a list of the stakeholders that were important to me. And then I started thinking whether they were advocates for me already, whether they would be challengers, whether I didn't know anything about them. And then starting doing like a listening tour, listening first, to get to know them and understand what was important for them. And that's how I found out, you know, that the value I brought to them beyond revenue. So I realized a lot of these people cared about technology adoption and my growth product could help with that. So that's where I realized, okay, I cannot talk to them about revenue, but I can talk to them about this. This is how our goals intertwine, and this is how I'm going to make them successful and my project successful.
Yeah, sure. And obviously you've been in a position whereby you've been able to like convey your value to a team and to your colleagues. But what should product marketers do if they find themselves in a scenario whereby like they're trying to lead, but the team members simply aren't receptive because they're not in a position of authority?
Yes. So I guess I think when I hear your question, I can see two scenarios. So maybe one, people are really scared of this one, which is to go into a room to get buy-in and absolutely no one buys in. I think that's very rare, but it might mean that you need to go back to the drawing board and see if you really understood the value you bring and you could, you know, find that middle point with the values and priorities of the people you're presenting to. But what I've seen that happens mostly is that if you have five people in a room, three say no to you, but two are okay to go and collaborate together. So what I think we should do is, I think it's a bit counterintuitive because you will think, okay, I need to convince everyone. But what I would say is don't spend that much time anymore with people that are no. Go after the people that actually want to work in the project with you and try to see if you can make it work with those two buy-ins. I don't know, maybe make it a bit smaller or adapt it. And once you've done that, if the project is successful and if you made that those people successful, you can use that as a convincing argument to bring the no's and convert them into a yes.
Okay. And in terms of like, I mean, obviously product marketing, or product marketers rather, that, you know, there are so many skills that are attributed to being a successful product marketer as a whole. But what role do skills such as people management, versatility, and adaptability play in influencing others and getting people to pull in the same direction and effectively work towards the same goal?
Yes, so I definitely think versatility and adaptability are important. I think when you are leading a project, especially a project that is maybe a bit out of the box or something new for your organization, you design this ideal plan and ideal execution in your head on how this needs to be. And this is great, but I think that adds the risk of not having enough adaptability to listen to your stakeholders and adapt to their feedback so they can collaborate with you. So giving you an example of this, now when I'm in the other side of the table and someone comes to me with a project and they want to influence me to work with them, most of the times I do want to support them and help them. But I would say most of the times my answer is yes, and this is how we're going to make it happen. So this is how I need you to adapt your proposal for me to collaborate with you. So I think that being that, having that adaptability and not forgetting that what you want is the ultimate goal to make your project successful. And that's really important.
Yeah, sure. And in terms of, like, you know, it's always nice to think that you know a lot about the field that you're working in. So when you're actually trying to influence a team as a non-leader, when you're not in a position of authority, how important is it necessarily to be viewed by other people as almost like a subject matter expert?
Yes. So I think it's, I mean, and I guess what you mean by that is the technical expertise or the expertise of like a particular industry. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, sure.
Yes. So I think it's always a nice to have. So it's a plus. I think it gives you a bit of a stamp of credibility. But really, if you haven't done the translation on how that brings value to the organization or to the other teams, and if they haven't seen that for themselves, you're still not going to get immediate buy-in or pull from the team. So I think this is nice to have, but you still need to think of how does that expertise translate into value for other people that you need to work with. Otherwise, it's just a thing you have, but that doesn't really have a lot of impact.
Okay, and I guess like there are some, you know, solutions or some sort of, you know, different you know, solutions that, you know, can be put in place to help people who aren't necessarily a figure of authority succeed. But with you know, positional authority, sometimes earmarked as a solution to helping product marketers influence if they don't have authority. How can they convince the manager that they actually warrant that title change? Like what processes can they put in place?
So I kind of agree with you that, of course, organizational authority can help in some cases. But really, I mean, when you think about it, even as a people manager, you still have to do some influencing and convincing. I don't know if Lawrence, has happened to you that your manager asks you to do a thing that you really don't want to do because you think it's not the right thing. Has that happened to you?
Yeah, no comment.
No comments. I think it has happened to all of us. All of us have got a manager that were like, you just need to do it because I say you need to do it. And I think one time probably it goes. But if you do that, if that's your way of getting things done, it ends up being very tired, and people and it's it people don't really put then their passion into it. I think there's a reason why good leaders are good influencers, inspirers. So I think that it can help, but I really think that's not going to save you from having to do that influencing with that authority exercise. Different is if you feel like your job needs to have a higher title because that gives you access to a different set of stakeholders. Okay, that would be a different conversation.
Okay, yeah, sure, that makes sense. And just kind of like rewinding a little bit and like backtracking to what we were saying before about product marketing skills. So another skill which is, you know, cropped up so many times in our state of product marketing reports that we always do, when we ask like for a key or what product marketers consider to be a key facet or, you know, a key characteristic really for a successful product marketer, collaboration and communication, it always, you know, they're two that always come up without fail. So how important is collaboration when you're trying to influence other team members, and what's your advice for successfully almost like enlisting the support of different teams within an organization, whether or not that be product marketing or otherwise?
Well, I think it's really important. I mean, collaboration, as you said, is the reason why as a community, we always talk about it as a key skill. I think on a project, you might have to do mini buy-ins and mini leading without authority in phases. First, you know, your team members that they're collaborating to. So, but once, I guess, when I think about this convincing and leading without authority, I must say I don't think it's something that I do alone. So I use my team members a lot to get this buy-in from leadership, right? First of all, they help me with that exercise of building my proposal and thinking of what's important to the leadership team and how I'm going to get the buy-in. They have maybe different advocates that I don't have, and that could help us sponsor the proposal. They help me understand how different team works. So I would say this is not something that you need to do on your own. You can enlist people's helps, and I think that's probably the best approach.
We're taking a quick break to tell you about our plans for an exciting new report, the State of Product Marketing Metrics Report 2023. In 2022, our research revealed 56.4% of PMMs identified metrics and reporting as one of their core responsibilities. So, we'll be honing in on the intricacies of the area, bringing you answers to your burning questions, such as what are the most common product marketing metrics? How are product marketers sharing metrics and reports with other teams? How do leaders use metrics to assess team performance? Which metrics tools are being used by product marketers and why? Which challenges are faced when reporting on metrics? And how much budget is devoted to metrics and reporting? But first, we need your input, your support, your expertise. Please head to www.productmarketingalliance.com/get-involved, complete the survey, and contribute to a write-up that's sure to revolutionize your approach to internal reporting processes. Now, let's head back to the podcast.
Are there any product marketers in particular that you've come across in your career that have been like exemplary leaders without necessarily occupying a position of power at the company? And if so, what is it that necessarily made them particularly memorable for you?
Oh, yes. I think I can think of a couple of peers that are really good at this. I'm thinking of two people, and they have different reasons why they're very good at it. I think the first person, she's really good at doing this inspiration. So thinking of what's important to the person she's talking to and then translating, you know, her objectives into their objectives and just kind of building this like vision to be successful together. So I think she probably preps a lot on how to do that, and she communicates it really effectively. She's a great communication leader. And then the other person, this was more from my previous company, I think he was great at project managing his projects and documenting them in a way where it was really easy for him to show and quantify the value of everything he was doing. And by doing that, eventually, he built a brand around himself that it was super easy to work with him, and it was super easy to show results of success. So it was very easy for him to get buy-in, because people knew that there was a high chance that if this person was involved, the project was going to be successful.
Okay, and I'm going to try and... I know I promised that I wouldn't throw any curveballs at you.
Go for it.
I'm going to throw a slight curveball, but having identified those two people, that have really made you sit up and think, you know, like, wow, they're like great leaders, and you know, not necessarily in that like position of power and a position of authority. Would you, in a way, say that, like, authority is somewhat overrated in that sense? Like, do you really need that position to, or like a lofty, lofty position to make your impact felt at a company?
I think I agree with you. And we were talking about that, right? When we were talking about title. I think we should define what authority, as you say, authority means. I think it's more... again, these people were seen as enablers. That was what made them valuable, and everyone wanted to be part of their success. And it was not really, they were not really just being directive and assertive. So it was not really, they were not really authority figures, but they were leading projects because they were able to sell a vision, and they made it seem very easy to be successful, but not because they had like any formal authority. So I agree with you. I think it's overrated. And I think people get stuck on, I'm a manager versus this person is a senior director. So obviously they know more than me, or I cannot do the things in the same way. So I agree.
There we go. Is that the key takeaway? Then authority is overrated.
I think that it is. It is. Authority is very overrated. At least, the way we understand it, yes, it is very overrated.
And what's been your your biggest product marketing success story so far in your career? If you had to pinpoint one thing that made you think, right, I'm really, really proud of that. Like, what is it that you would say, right, I'm pointing that above everything else?
Yeah, so I would say it's a project I did at Salesforce. I started at Salesforce a couple of years ago because I felt like finally I felt very comfortable to put together all the things I had learned since that very first project I told you about. And this was when I joined our self-training function for our product. Didn't really include PMMs at all. So it was happening. There were trainings being delivered, but we were not being included. People didn't think of pulling us in. So I really took it to myself, okay, this is something I want to change. I want people to see value in bringing the PMMs to the trainings about products. I know it sounds very obvious, but once a company is set on how they run things, drive change is sometimes a bit hard. So I did apply all this, or I tried to apply all these things we talk about. Like I listened to my stakeholders. I understood what they cared about. I presented something quite effective. I follow up with them a lot. And I ended up going from now and ever reached me out for a training, where the point that now my team has a different problem, which is we have so many people reaching out to us that we need to think, okay, now how do we do this in a better, efficient way where we don't need to run, I don't know, 20 sessions a month. So this has been one of my favorite projects.
And just on the back of what you were just saying then about, like, you know, you understood what it is that your stakeholders cared about. Like, was that something that you did almost like proactively off your own back, or was it something that you kind of, I don't know, you kind of like plugged into what was going on around you already, and then extracted the information from that? What did that look like for you? If it was a case of kind of putting things in place, how did you set the process and, you know, set the ball rolling with that?
Yes. So, I mean, there's always a bit of organizational knowledge that you know of, like, how things are, and established knowledge that, you know, this person, I know this person's targets, they're about this. But what I really did is this, like, listening tour around the stakeholders to listen from them. What would be valuable? What can I bring to the table that they don't already have? And at first you think, okay, this is really, I mean, do I really want to bother these senior people asking them about their priorities? You always feel like when you go to a senior person, it's always you telling them something to them. But then I realized people really love talking about their business, you know, that now one really says no to talking about their priorities and their goals and the things they're passionate about for the year. People really love it. That's how I figure things out. I ask them, okay, if I could, you know, what's important to you? And if I could bring something to the table, what would it be? And once I listened to everyone, I saw how I could make that happen.
So in many ways then, and would you, to what extent would you argue that in doing so, you've kind of demonstrated that, like, courage really is like another product marketing skill really that, like, could be argued that, you know, could be added to this, like, massive list? Because I've got to be honest, I've never really considered, like, courage and bravery to kind of be skill that a product marketer needs to kind of, like, get that level up and carry on progressing. It's never been something that's been brought to me, certainly on this podcast. So would you say that courage and, like, a little bit of bravery, would you say that those kind of characteristics are almost what are needed to force your way into, you know, certainly the world of a stakeholder?
Yes, I love that, because I don't know if you've done this exercise where you need to find what your core values are, like your three core values, and courage is one of mine. So I'm happy that you bring that up. I think it is, especially because I think product marketing in many organizations is somewhat new function. And in some cases, people don't tell you, like, they just throw you there and you need to kind of define what product marketing means and what things you want to start first. So say yes, courage on just reaching out to people, and I think the abysm is smaller than what you think it is. It looks like a huge thing, and it's probably just a puddle that you can step on it, because in general, people want to be successful and they want their company to be successful, so they want you to be successful. And I think in general, okay, what I found is people are quite happy to help their coworkers and make them successful. So you just need to go and listen to them and tell them what you want to do and get their feedback. So yes, I would say courage it is.
It's strange, isn't it, how, like, a lot of people may not necessarily look at it, or they may look at stakeholders, but not necessarily take into consideration, like you say, like, they want their company to be successful. So, like, surely that's almost like an open ticket for you to go and communicate with them, as opposed to, like, having a door slammed in your face.
I would say, going back to that first project I told you about, I realized, I told you about, like, user adoption and revenue and everything, but one of the things this mentor helped me to realize is that, you know, you already have a common goal with them. I thought I didn't, you know, because I thought, oh, they don't care. She said, yes, you have a common goal. Everyone wants the company to go well. So that's your common goal. And you can build from that. And if we are both of us deciding that authority is overrated, then I don't think you should be scared of reaching out to people that you think are too senior for you, to talk to. It probably depends a bit on the culture your company has as well. I don't want to get people into trouble, but I think in general, people are happy to have a 10-minute chat and they don't mind. So go for it.
Yeah, you don't know answers to questions unless you ask. So it's...
Exactly. And think about it. What is the worst thing that a senior person can tell to you, I don't have time. That's the worst thing. I don't have time. Okay. They don't have time. That's fine. Again, concentrate on the yeses and go for the person that does have time. But that's the worst thing that can happen to you. So that's okay.
Yeah, I love that. Concentrate on the yeses.
Yeah.
So it's been fantastic chat, Anna. Really, really enjoyed talking with you. Just to wrap things up with one last question. So at the time of recording, we're a month into 2023 somehow. It's gone super, super quick. But how do you see the rest of 2023 unfolding in the world of product marketing?
That's another curveball. How do I see things? So I think definitely we're going to have like that adaptability we were talking about, because things change so fast. We need to be able to adapt our messaging to what customers want really fast. And I think there's a mindset of being always thinking always of what you have so you can fast adapt it to the current mood of the customer and not having to build things from scratch. So I would say that's one of the things I can see changes for my team at this new year.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for your time. I've really enjoyed your company. So thank you very much and all the very best for the rest of the year.
Great. Thank you, Lawrence. I did enjoy it too.
Thanks so much for tuning into this episode of the Product Marketing Insider podcast. Remember, we have an extensive back catalogue of episodes waiting to be explored, as well as dedicated series focusing on core product marketing areas such as storytelling, go-to-market, leadership, sales enablement, competitive intelligence, and much more. For the full selection, head to www.productmarketingalliance.com/podcasts.